Thank this committee for asking me to come up here and share, because it's an honor to be asked to share anywhere, here, at a meeting, an H&I commitment, anything. It's a, like, for me, man, it still gets me when someone calls me and asks me to speak anywhere. Thursday, they had called me and they said, someone had canceled for the men's rap. Can you do this? And I said, yeah. And as soon as I hung up the phone, I was kind of like, damn. You know what I mean? Because this thing's still intimidating, and I still get scared of certain things. And my younger brother was sitting right there. My brother's like, what's going on? And I said, they just called me to ask me to do the retreat, or the men's rap at the retreat. He said, men's rap? He said, are they taping it? I said, yeah, because he's heard me listen to the speaker's tapes before and stuff like that. He starts dying laughing. He says, you got to get me a tape of you rapping. Like, and I explained it to him what it was about, and like he said, just go up there and do a good job, man. Just do what you do. And it is a little intimidating, but you know what? It's a blessing, man. My first time at this retreat, I had 20-some days clean. I just came back from using. My sponsor was speaking up here. He brought me up here. I didn't know what to expect. It was crazy because, like, I was expecting people to bust cases of beer out of the back of their trunks and this and that, and I didn't see that. There was all these people up here for one purpose, and I had no clue that NA was that big. I came here for the weekend, and, like, I was, you know, for the 20-some days I had clean, I was running around with all these dudes from Altoona, where I'm from, and I'm listening to stories of jails and overdoses and this and that and whatever, whatever. And I remember at the end of the weekend there was a spiritual speaker, and I remember looking down this line of these guys and seeing every one of them with tears in their eyes. I didn't even know what they were crying about. I started crying myself, you know what I mean? Because, like, at the end of the weekend, man, like, I was so happy that I was clean. For the first time in my life, I realized I could do this, too. Because that was always my thing. You could do it, but I couldn't. How was I going to do this thing? Low self-esteem would always tell me all the time, you know, you can't do this. There's no way that you can do this. And at the end of that weekend, it was kind of like that distorted reality was shattered. I got to NA this time when I was 21 years old. My life was trashed, man. But yet, at the same time, in my distorted perception said everything was all right. My distorted perception said that you know what, it really ain't that bad. And to be completely honest, I didn't come to NA to get clean. I came here because the family was on my case. The ways and means to get more was running out. Some people had pressured me into going to rehab. I went to rehab, left AMA. The only reason that the family came and picked me up from rehab is because I told them I'm going to start going to meetings again and this and that. And that was my way out of rehab at time. And I came to a meeting the night I got out of rehab. My girlfriend at the time had escorted me to the meeting to make sure I was going. And I walked up and I ran into a couple people that were like partners in crime with me out on the streets. They disappeared on the streets for like 8 months, 9 months, a year. And I walked into my first meeting out of that rehab, and there they stood. Smiles on their faces. They had some weight on. Their clothes didn't have bleach and blood stains all over them. I mean, everything about them said that they were doing the right thing. And I went to meetings for a couple days, you know what I mean, just to kind of get the family off my back. And would walk up in a meeting, man, and people would say, how are you? How are things going? And I would look right in their face and I'd say, great. Everything's wonderful. Just for today, I'm grateful to be, you know what I mean, this and that. And I was talking all the language. Yet, at night when I would go home, I would curl up in my bed in a ball and just constantly just be overwhelmed with the thought of getting high. Overwhelmed. And I held on and I held on and I held on. And you know what? I didn't tell nobody about it. And eventually, I ended up getting high. I went out for 3 days, man, after having a few weeks, and those 3 days beat the bullshit out of me. At the end, man, like, I was so sick of the way I was living and so sick of the way I felt from doing the things that I had to do to get high and, you know, just being that person who I was, that, like, taking my life sounded like a real good fucking idea. But you know what? They say God does for us what we can't do for ourselves sometimes. And I picked up the phone. And I had a couple phone numbers from like some people in the rooms, and I called them, and they were at my house within minutes, man. And they sat there and they listened to me cry, and they listened to me say I'm a piece of shit and I can't do this anymore, and blah, 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 blah. And the only words that come out of their mouth is, look, it isn't what you did. What are you going to do to make it right? That was August 2nd, 2002. My clean date's August 3rd, 2002. At the beginning of the month, I just celebrated 4 years. And you know what, man? I would be a liar if I stood up here and I said that all them 4 years came like that. I went through some struggles to stay clean, man. Not every day is great. But it's a hell of a lot better than getting high. It's crazy, man, because, like, I had this, like I said, my perception of this whole thing was screwed up from the door. And I had this illusion that if I stayed here and I got some clean time, like, by the time I had a year, I would have a blonde on this arm, a brunette on this arm, driving around in my BMW, going to my brand new house, and would have a pocket full of money. That ain't the case, for sure. I got no girl. I drive a 92 Honda that the bumper's falling off the front of it. I'm living with my parents right now. Paycheck to paycheck, struggling to get by, borrowing money off my mom at here and there to get a pack of cigarettes with 4 years. You know what I mean? In my mind, with 4 years, when I first got here, you should be like way up here. And that's definitely not the case, man. In the book, man, in More Be Revealed, it says, we come to know ourselves for the first time. We experience new sensations, to love, to be loved, to know that people care about us, and to have concern and compassion for others. We find ourselves doing and enjoying things that we never thought we would be doing. We make mistakes, and we accept and learn from them. We experience failure, and we learn how to succeed. Often, we have to face some type of crisis during our recovery, such as the death of a loved one, financial difficulties, or divorce. These are realities of life, and they don't go away just because we get clean. Some of us, even after years of recovery, found ourselves jobless, homeless, and penniless. We entertained the thought that staying clean was not paying off, and the old thinking stirred up self-pity, resentment, and anger. No matter how painful life's tragedies can be for us, one thing is clear, we must not use no matter what. And in a nutshell, man, that's my story up to now. I got clean in a relationship with a girl who wasn't an addict, right? She had a son that was 2 years old. When I got in a relationship with this girl, the first thing I said to her was, look, you know, I got problems. I don't want to bring this shit around your kid, blah, blah, blah. And she said, I'll help you. That's what she said, and I was in, man, because she had a nice little bank account built up. And after being with this girl a year, I came into recovery, and I got clean, right? And all this crazy shit was put in my head, you know what I mean, that, like I need to settle down and have the wife and the picket fence and the two cats and a dog and whatever like that. And I stayed with this girl, man. A lot of it was because she stayed with me during the time I was using. Roughly about when we were together, about, you know, the whole first part of my recovery was just fucked up with me and her, man, because she knew the person that stuck a needle in her arm every day. She knew the person that lied and cheated and stole off her. And And she tried to help me to the best of her ability. And like, for real, I'm grateful for that. You know what I mean? She tried to do everything she could for me. And when I came here, she was pissed off that these people in here could help me and she couldn't. Why can these people help you when I've tried all this time and couldn't? So, I mean, like, everything was screwed up, man. We fought every day. You know, I spent a lot of time with the people from the rooms, my sponsor, you know, going here and there and stuff like that. And eventually, like, some distance was created between me and her, man, and she ended up cheating on me. And I lost it. You know what I mean? A bottom line, I lost it. How the hell can you do this shit to me? That was my attitude. How could you do this to me? Not realizing the shit that I put this girl through for the last year. You know what I mean? I went through all these feelings and all these emotions. And you know what? I wanted to get high so bad because, like, I couldn't stand the feeling of, like, distrust that I was going through at the time. And I went to some people, you know, I called my sponsor and I said, you know, what the hell is going on? What am I supposed to do? And blah, blah, blah. And my sponsor's not one of them type of guys that bust out the basic text and, you know what I mean, read off a passage or anything like that. He said, well, man, this is some big boy shit. Pray about it and do the right thing. He said, no matter what, I got your back. And I left this girl for like a month. That was like 2 years ago. And I came up to this retreat right here for the weekend, man. And the first day I walked in, I walked into a meeting and I saw this dude from my area sharing in the meeting. He had like roughly like, you know, 9 months, a year or something like that. My very first thought is, what the fuck is this dude doing up here sharing? Why the fuck didn't they ask me to share? And I walked out of the meeting resentful, pissed off, you know, because, you know, sometimes my thing is I think my shit don't stick. And the reality of the situation is that I was in no fucking condition to come up here and carry a message to Narcotics Anonymous. I left that weekend with phone numbers, but not one of them was a fucking man. Every single one of them was a female. And I ended up getting in this relationship with this girl that was in recovery up here. This girl, like, 2 months before this was engaged to one of my fucking sponsee brothers, man. You know what I mean? It was a mess. A mess. I stayed with this girl for a week, went back to my ex for a week. Stayed with this girl for a week, went back to my ex for a week. And at the end, man, like, my sponsor would call me and he said, what's going on? And I went back to that old shit when I first got here. Oh, everything's all right. Everything's great. Refused to tell my sponsor and the people that really cared about me and the people that would tell me, yo, man, what the fuck are you doing? Would not tell those people the truth, but would go to my boys who were fucking with newcomers in the meetings and tell them what was going on, and they'd give me a pound and say, go do what you got to do. And that's the shit I was running off at the time. See, I found out in here, they say, you know, ask a couple people, you know, if you have a problem or what suggestion they have for you to do. But the thing is I would go to the people that I knew was going to give me the answer that I wanted to hear instead of going to the people that would tell me how it is, bottom line. And at the end of it, man, I was ready to give this whole thing up. My life had become so unmanageable that getting high seemed a lot better than the shit I was doing. Because I ain't that type of dude that can run around here and fucking do this girl and that girl and have this girl on the side. I ain't that dude. Spiritually, man, I was bankrupt. Just like when I rolled up in here and I was clean. I had like 2 years clean. But you know what? I stuck it out, man, and I didn't get high. And I went back to the ex, right? Don't worry, we'll work this out. You know, we'll go to counseling and all that kind of shit and blah, 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 blah. And in reality, the reason I went back is because it was comfortable there, man. I had a place to stay. You know, that was my thing, man. That was where my comfortable zone was. Even though the whole time, all this me and this girl did was 1 week we were best friends and 1 week we were all like, let's get married and this and that and blah, 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 blah. And then for 3 weeks we fucking hated each other. You know, constantly at each other's throats. And I would go to a meeting and I would say, you know what? I would say, I'm tired of this girl, I need to get the hell out of here, and this and that, she's getting on my damn nerves, da 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 da. And then as soon as I would go home, I changed into a completely different person. Because like I said, that's where my comfortable zone was, man. It says right in the book, you know, we return to old familiar pain. I like that shit. You know, I like, in a sick, distorted kind of way, that chaos and drama and not knowing what was going to happen next was exciting, man. This girl was, and you know what, and I ain't talking shit on this girl. Me and her are friends today. I love her to death. You know what I mean? Anything I need, she's there. Anything she needs, I'm there. Like, don't think I'm talking shit on her. But this is just the reality of the situation. You know what I mean? Just constant up and downs. You know what? And this girl has a son. And, you know, wanting that whole wife and the picket fence and all that kind of shit. You know, I started taking care of the kid. You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. And you know what, man? That taught me a lot. Because even today, man, I love this kid to death. And he's been a big part of my life. Some days, like, I've stayed clean. When I lived in this house, man, I stayed clean for this kid because he didn't have nobody else. You know what I mean? We talk about in here, step up to the plate and take a fucking swing, man. And that's what I did with this kid. You know, I had the feeling saying people are going to think you're a sucker taking care of someone else's kid and this is that and blah, 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 blah. But you know what? That was one of the best experiences of my recovery. But I rode this thing out, man. I rode this thing out through all the misery and all the bullshit and blah, 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 blah. And not too long ago, man, me and her sat down and both of us looked across the table with each other and we said, you know what? You ain't happy. I'm not happy. Let's part our ways. And like I said, man, there was a kid involved in the situation. You know, we had a house together. The bills were split between us, you know. And it was hard, man. It was real fucking hard. But God was telling me the whole time, like when I'd sit down at night and I'd pray and I'd say, you know, what am I supposed to do? You know what I mean? What am I supposed to do? You know, my gut would burn and God would say, you know what to do. You know what's the right thing to do. You can't stay in this shit no more. You know what I mean? And I left, man. And now I'm in the process of, like, readjusting because I ain't used to being alone. I'm used to going home every night and laying down and having someone laying down beside me, and now I'm back to my mother's house, sleeping in a fucking attic. That used to be my bedroom that's turned into storage. You know what I mean? Like, I can reach off of my bed and touch Christmas boxes. You know what I mean? Used to having privacy. You know what I mean? If I want to walk around the house in my boxers, I could walk around my house in my boxers. Now I'm at my mother's house. I can't do that shit. When I had my own place, you know, I could come home from a long day at work and walk in and watch whatever TV I wanted to watch. You know, my dad's watching TV. He ain't changing the fucking channel for me. You know what I mean? That's his TV and his couch. But I tell you what, man, I have a 16-year-old brother, and there's a blessing hidden behind everything. And when I was getting high and stuff like that, my brother was like 10 years old. And he came to, like, the family sessions at rehab and see me run up in the house like a nut screaming at my mother, just give me the fucking money. You know what I mean? And he's seen all that bullshit. And my brother actually had to go to, like, got in some trouble in school because a kid pretended like he was shooting up with a pencil and my brother snapped out. And my brother had to go through all this stuff and, like, over the time that I've lived at my mother's in the last couple months, like, me and this boy are like this now. Tight, talking every day, you know what I mean, this and that, what's up with you, how you doing? And, like, we established a relationship over the time I've gotten clean. I've been clean, but not like this. You know what I mean? Right now in my life, he is my best friend. And I could not honestly ask for anything else, man. If that's the blessing that I had to get out of this situation, you know what? That's the greatest fucking thing I could possibly have. Cause I need to let this kid know that that, look, this is what's out there. This is what goes on. You know, drugs and alcohol and stuff like that, that isn't something new to my family. I need to let him know, if you choose to go down this path, this is what's going to happen. You know what I mean? And that's fucking great, man. You know what I mean? To be in a position to be able to do that, to make an impact on somebody else's life. When I first got here and stuff like that, like I had a high school education, I worked in warehouses and factories and doing roofing and shit like that, you know what I mean? And it was never for me, man. You know, I would go to work doing that kind of shit and I would be miserable. And this program says improve the quality of your life. And that's one of the things my sponsor, like, is real adamant on. Improve the quality of your life. Whatever that is for you, I don't know. But for me, I went back to school. I started school like 2 years ago. And I was like the dude in high school who could give a fuck less about school. If I showed up, I slept all day. The only fucking time I was awake was during lunch. You know what I mean? And I remember there was this teacher in high school, and he caught me skipping his class, and he was taking me down to the principal's office. And he grabbed me and he pinned me up against the wall in the hallway. He said, "You know what? You ain't shit and you ain't ever going to be shit." And I lived that, man, for a long time, because he just affirmed what I believed in my head forever. You know? So I lived up to that expectation. And today, man, like, that expectation is gone. Like, the sky's the limit, man. It says in the book that lost dreams awaken and new possibilities arise. Like I said, I don't know what they are for you, but for me, I got some goals in life, man. We say just for today in here, but look, I plan on being around here a long fucking time. So for me, I got to do some things that make me happy and improve the quality of my life in the future. School's not easy for me. I'm definitely no scholar, and I don't spend 100 hours a day studying. But you know what? I show up, I do it to the best of my ability, and at the end of the day, like, I feel good about myself. And the reality is, before I come up here, I was thinking, you know, what does it mean to be a man in this process? You know what I mean? And I was thinking about all this crazy stuff, and like, in reality, for me, being a man, it's just standing up for what I believe in. Following my principles no matter what. There's that old saying, stand for something or fall for anything. Like, my principles and my spiritual condition are the most important thing to me today in the world. Like, this program has done so much in my life. Step work has done so much in my life that, like, I ain't trying to give that up, man. I'm trying to maintain the spiritual condition that I have. Yeah, some days I fuck up. Some days I do some stuff that, you know what, it may not be right. But bottom line is I do not get high. Bottom line. Last week I was going through some shit with this whole, like I was saying about the whole change thing. And right up the street from my parents' house is this bar. Now all the people I know that are on methadone, and all the people that I know are on Suboxone, and all the girls I used to hang out with and shit like that in high school, this is where they hang out. Like, when I drive past this bar on the way to my mother's house, I see their cars out there. You know what I mean? I'm sitting at home going through some shit, some feelings, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. And that's my biggest thing in the world, is my feelings fuck me up, man. And my best idea, I said, just go to the bar. Go up there and shoot some pool. I ain't never shot pool in a bar in a day of my fucking life. You know, I was in the bathroom of the bar doing whatever, you know. Go play pool for a little bit. I ain't going up there to play pool. You know what I mean? And I was sitting in my fucking car going through, like, the thing of, should I stay or should I go? What should I do? I called, like, two people, and neither of them picked up the phone. I'm like, fuck, you know what I mean? What am I going to do? And my head starts telling me, well, just go. They didn't pick up the phone, so it'll be all right. You can blame it on that shit. If you would have picked up the phone, maybe I wouldn't have went to the bar. And, like, just as I'm going through all that stuff, the one dude calls back. You know what I mean? I'm like, listen, man, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm going through, blah, 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 blah. Just going through the whole thing with him. And you know what his suggestion was? Go to bed. Real simple. Take your ass upstairs and go to bed. Because sometimes, man, it ain't all about, like, some real spiritual type sayings and busting out the basic text. Like, this is life, man. This program's a way of life, not my life. Sometimes I just need some real simple type shit. Just go to bed. And that's what I did, man. I went upstairs and go to bed, and you know what? I woke up the next day clean. To be real, like, being a man, that's the kind of people who I choose to hang around with, is the people that ain't gonna play my bullshit. If one more person would have patted me on the back and said it'd be alright, I'd be fucking dead. These people, the people I choose to hang out with are the winners in the program. You know, it says stick with the winners. And that says that there's some losers in here. Not saying that I need to be justifying whether you're a loser or not, but you know what? What you're doing may not be the way I want to live. So I don't need to associate myself with you. I stick around the dudes that that are diehard about this thing, that no matter what, I'm staying clean. You know, that kind of shit, man. And that's the kind of people I need in my life. Because you know what? Every single person that I hang out with has some kind of characteristic of what I want in my life. My sponsor has certain characteristics of what I want in my life. You know, my support group, each member of my support group, yeah, they might not be all together there, and most of them are fucking crazy and, you know, this and that. But you know what? Each of them has their own little characteristic that I hope someday I can be all right with. But I don't know, man. This program is awesome. It's 100% totally awesome. If you'd have told me 4 years ago that I'd be standing up in here today, ain't no way. Because my plan was, when I hit a year, I was going to start drinking again, because I could do that shit. And when I hit a year, man, I said no. And I kept going. I hit 2 years. And I hit 3 years. And before you know it, I'm looking back on this thing like, wow. Is this really what's happening in my life? Is this really what's going on? Because some days, man, it seems like a dream. I used to go to bed at night when I was getting high, man, and all the things that I had to do throughout the day to get the next one would be killing me. I don't know about you, but I would do whatever I needed to do to get that money, to get that bag. And as soon as I stuck that shit in my arm, the disease would be gone and leave me. And I'd be by myself, struggling with what I had to do, what I did. And every night I used to pray, God, please just don't let me wake up in the morning. Please. I do not want to have to do this shit again. And in the morning, man, when my eyes would open, it was like, here we go again. The same fucking thing every day. Now, man, when I go to close my eyes at night, sometimes, man, I tear up just thinking, wow, please let me wake up tomorrow morning, God, please. And, like, I'm that dude when I pop up out of bed in the morning, I'm smiling, running around, dancing and shit, singing in the shower, even though I really can't sing. You know what I mean? Just loving the fact that today is a whole new day. Today is a whole new day in this life, man. I don't know, like I said, man, sometimes to look back on it, it's like, wow. And you know what? This thing is available to us all. If you're new, keep coming, man. This program isn't just for those who want it. This program's for those who need it. But if you stick around here long enough, need will turn into want. That's how I did it. They kept telling me, keep coming back and you'll change in spite of yourself. And you know what? I woke up one morning and I said, I love staying clean. I don't know. I'm going to turn this over to Pete now. But thanks for letting me share.
Hey, thanks again, Joe. Sky is the limit. And appreciate your powerful message. Our second speaker is Pete D. from the NA Saturday Night Group of NA, Thor Mount Highlands.
Hi, my name is Pete, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Pete.
And actually, my home group is the Wins Unite NA Way group down in Bedford. But good to see some folks who haven't seen them in a while. I really have no idea what I'm going to talk about. I know what I'm not going to talk about, which I mentioned with anyone, about what guy rap might be. But I'm very grateful to this program. I can never pay back probably what it's given back to me. I first came into this program in 1986 for the wrong reasons. You know, it was basically to try and hold on to a marriage, which was about 6 years old at that point. And I had a daughter that was a little over five. And I really liked being a dad. And to be honest with you, I really liked being a husband. For one of the first times in my life, it really put some real meaning there, you know, I thought. I had enjoyed getting high ever since probably from the first time I tried it. Boy, I thought I'd found a whole new niche, you know, and it was something I could be good at, I thought. And I didn't have to be physically fit, and I didn't have to, you know, addiction didn't really seem to matter, you know, what level you come into it at, you know, as far as who you are and what you are, where you're from and all that. But I knew one thing for sure. It made me feel like I belonged, you know, like I belonged in that little secretive underground niche of people that are getting high, you know, in the, for me in the early days, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s. So I'd been doing it a while. When I came to my first NA meeting. Actually, my very first meeting was one that was in the other fellowship, but that was only because I wasn't aware of one that was available that particular night when I said, okay, I'll try and get some help. My wife had given me an ultimatum. I either get some help or... I guess she was going to go back to North Dakota, you know, take my daughter with her. And it really wasn't rocket science work to like run the projector, you know, fast forward to see where I'd be, you know, in that woe is me, my family's left me motive. You know, it wouldn't take me long before I'd be really rolling at the bottom. We used to have arguments, but it would first start out as a discussion. I don't know. My spouse always used to set the stage. Anytime we were going to have a discussion, Pete, we need to talk. Boy, you know, right away I'm building that barrier, you know. It immediately took me back to, you know, when my parents used to, like, sit at either side of the room and just bombard me with, you know, how much of a fuck-up I am. And me not having any defense because they were right, you know. But, you know, I wouldn't let my wife browbeat me. So we'd start off with this discussion. That was usually about finances, and then it would run right into, you know, my disease being the reason why, you know, my finances were the way they were. because I didn't make a whole lot of money back then. I really didn't. I remember paychecks being about what my unemployment checks were, and they were, you know, the minimal payment. So it was, and I worked hard for that. It was physical labor, and, you know, I didn't think what I was doing was all that bad. You know, I thought that I worked hard, you know, and hey, I'm not running around at the bars, I'm not out, I'm not cheating on you, you know where I'm at, I'm right here. But I knew I was unavailable. I knew I was not really there. You know, if there was something that she really needed to talk about, I'd like tune her out. I'd forget what she was talking about. I'd only listen to what I wanted to hear, and then I get bored, and then I'd just tune her off, you know. My daughter is precious. You know, I used to see that little girl as she'd greet me, you know, and, you know, when she'd get ready for bed, you know, the hugs and the kisses, those are priceless, guys, when you're hurt. Young children truly are a gift from God. For the first time, I really had some purpose, other than being the best party animal I could be, who could, you know, do more, drink more, last longer, whatever, you know, get there the earliest, leave there the latest, whatever. And you know what, even as a father, even though I thought, well, gee, I love them both dearly, was I still really willing to do whatever it took to be their best? And no, I wasn't. You know, there were stipulations. You know, there were certain things I wouldn't do. I wanted to work a job where, you know, I could dress the way I wanted and I could look the way I wanted, and I knew the type of people I'd be working with. Anyway, very gratefully, after one of our arguments, I left, you know, which I'm a pro at, you know, when the going gets tough, you know, Pete gets going out the door, you know. And I had nowhere to go, really. I really had nowhere to go. Nobody that I knew wanted me to show up on their doorstep, you know, at late hour in the night and say, hey, can you put me up? Nobody would have done that I know of. But I do remember reaching out that night. One of the, you know, early on, I can probably really count early on the amount of times I really prayed from the heart. And I did run that projector fast forward. And I did see where my life was, and I could see where my life could be, you know, if I wasn't doing what I was doing. And I knew that was the right thing. All along, I knew I was not doing what I should be doing. You know, not being the person I was meant to be. You know, my folks didn't raise me to be, you know, the half-stepper or whatever that I had become. You know, they always wanted things to be better than they had it, and they brought me up knowing, you know, the difference between right and wrong, and what I was doing was wrong. You know, I knew I was a commandment breaker, and number one, you know, I was worshiping another God, you know, on a regular basis every time I got high. And I reached out to the higher power that I'd turned my back on probably 15 years prior to. And I just asked for help. It was a real simple prayer. It was you know, God, please help me. And immediately I did feel like I was going to be okay. And I was sitting in a car in a parking lot of an establishment that was closed, and I fell asleep. Now, back then, I didn't fall asleep as easily as I do today. But I knew I was going to be all right. I didn't know how I knew that, but I just felt that feeling come over me, and I went to sleep. And I woke up, and it was dawn, and I beat it back home. And I, you know, came in the house like the dog with his tail between his legs, and I crept upstairs and to our bedroom, and my wife had her back to the door that I came through, and I tried to apologize. I tried to, you know, I hadn't stayed out all night, I don't think ever, since we were married up until that point. And I apologized for that, and I told her I was going to change, and, you know, I'm sorry, and things will be different. And she rolled over, and I could see that her pillow was pretty wet. And she said, "Pete, you need to get help." And I knew she was right, you know. I knew she was right. And I went to work, you know, like I always did. I remember my boss telling me when I told him I was going to... I started working at this place when I got out of the service, and for about three quarters of a year, you know, I was like one of those, well, part of the time Pete will be here, and the other part of the time, you know, he'll call with some good excuse of why he's not going to be at work. But when I told him I was getting married, and guys, it was because, I was crazy about that girl. I was crazy about that girl from North Dakota, but we were going to have a child. And I thought that's what I should do, you know. For the first time, I think any time before that, in any other relationship before that, I probably would have just said, "Well, see ya." But I knew that deep down she was a good gal, and she was probably one of the first gals that I ever would have considered, you know, as a parent, you know, of my children or a lifelong spouse. So. When I told my boss that I was getting married, he said, "You know, you're going to have to come to work every day." Just because I was getting married didn't mean he was going to give me any more money. So I did go to work, and I worked every day. I worked hard every day. And I also worked in the evenings, and I worked on the weekends, moonlighting, doing tree work on the side. You can make a pretty good buck, you know, on a weekend, taking some trees down. And this is outside of Philadelphia, just outside of Philadelphia, where people have big properties and big money, and they worry about that little bit of deadwood, you know, that's up there in that big red oak. So I could make some nice money, but you know what? I spent nice money, too. And didn't have a whole lot to show for it. So... I did go to work that day, and when I came home, I knew, you know what? What was going to be different? You know, I'd made promises to how many people beforehand, same promises. What was going to be different this time? But when I got home, you know what? My wife had made some phone calls, and there was a handwritten meeting list, you know, that was on the dining room table, and that first meeting I went to was in the other fellowship, and I really don't remember a whole lot. Broke a smile because I was so pissed off being in there. Because I hadn't had a drink in 7 years, so what the hell did I need to be in an AA meeting? I did go to the NA meetings, one every night, and in the beginning, you know, that I think it was about guy rap. Tell you the truth, what really turned me off in the beginning was what I was seeing. It was so foreign and so different than what I was used to, you know. I could probably count my associates, you know, on one hand, and most of them are coworkers. My social life was pretty slim. It was like, you know, when I came home and when I went to work. So I was not the social butterfly. So when I saw guys hugging, you know, I said, well, they better not come up to me. But I also noticed, too, a kind of electricity in the room. You know, that kind of bubbling chatter, you know, of people that are happy. And I immediately thought, well, these people can't be like me. They can't be addicts. They're too damn happy. Because I was pretty miserable at that time. I didn't know how to live, you know, without doing what I've been doing for most of my life. I was scared to death. I was scared at my first meetings. And I didn't think those people were for real. I didn't know what, I didn't know what was going on, but I do remember at that second meeting I went to, it was in Ardmore, and there was a guy there who I never saw before, and I never saw him again, from Germantown. And we used to have an hour and a half meeting, but it was an hour meeting, then you had a 10-minute break, and then you came back in, you know, until the second half hour. And it was usually feedback over a speaker or whatever, or topic or whatever, reading, whatever. But they had breaks, and I figured I was so pissed off about being there, I was going to sit in there during the break and not go out and smoke. Because I thought maybe I wouldn't come back in. But there was a guy sitting next to me, and he reached over and he shook my hand. He asked me my name, and he asked me what my drug of choice was. And then he proceeded to tell me a little bit about himself. He told me he was a heroin addict who had been clean for 13 years. And to me, that sounded like an eternity. I looked him in the eyes, and I knew he wasn't lying. He told me he had been restoring a house in Germantown, that his family life was happy today, and his relationship with his wife was good. And I wanted what he had. The only thing I remember, you know, was that he said, you got to come to these meetings and you know, to come to another one. You know, give this thing a shot. That if it worked for him, it could work for me. And there's a little bit of hope that I got. That's what I remember. That's what I try to what I try to pass on to a newcomer. When I see him sitting in a chair, uncomfortable, pretty beat up, you know how they kind of stick out in the crowd? You know, it's a new face. Those new faces stick out, you know. I never saw that guy again, but I did keep coming back. And eventually, you know, I stopped comparing. I started to identify. There was a fellow named Ray. He'd been keeping a meeting going, I think, for 4 years in this little room in a church in Bala Cynwyd. And there were lots of times he was the only one there. But he had made a service commitment, and he was going to, you know, have this meeting that was walking distance from his house. And you know what? He was there for me. Because that was the first time I heard somebody tell my story at a meeting. I mean, right on down to, like, how, well, for him it was a son, but, you know, how he felt, like, you know, when he couldn't wait to put his kid to bed for bedtime so he could get high. and how guilty he felt, you know, and you know, saying, well, gee, I can't play with you right now, and blah, 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 blah. I could relate to a lot of that. And the scheming and the gaming and the things we do to our significant others so we can keep doing what we need to do. Probably one of the hardest things I had to do was to ask somebody else for help. And I think that's kind of inbred in me, too. I don't know whether that's a guy thing. You know, the comedians make jokes about guys, you know, that will drive around in circles for hours, lost as you know what. Will we stop and ask for directions? No. Yeah. For me, asking for help was very difficult. And but I kept hearing this thing, sponsor. And to be honest with you, I'd sit in a meeting and I'd listen intently, but I wasn't hearing a whole lot. Things had to be made really simple for me to grasp. Really simple. And for me, that's what a sponsor did. He really kept it simple. And, you know, I was... yes, I like going to meetings. Yes, I like seeing those pretty gals. But for real, I needed to hang with the guys. I needed a guy sponsor. I needed help from a man. I really didn't know how to be a real man other than the example my father set. And I could have told you all kinds of shortcomings there, you know, but this guy helped me. You know, he really did. He taught me how to have fun without drugs. You know, taught me that, you know, you can go on a blue fishing trip with 20 other people and have a blast. Stay out all night long and nobody use them. You know, how a pizza party at somebody's house could be a lot of fun, you know. It was stuff like that. I didn't think there was fun after you put the drug down, even though drugs stopped being fun for me. Turned into a real job for me. Fun recovery, that was important, you know, and that's what I got from the fellowship. For a guy, it's fellowship. I don't know what it is for a girl, galship or something like that. But yeah, there was a bunch of guys, and we would go, we'd pile in vehicles and we'd go to meetings, and that's how we did it in the beginning, you know. I'd stand outside in an empty parking lot, because actually going home, things weren't all that comfortable at home still, guys. They were still pretty doggone uncomfortable. Because you know what? There was that trial period where, you know, how many times have we said we're going to do something and then didn't do it? So they was like, okay, you show me. You go to your meetings. She didn't know whether I was going to meetings or not, you know. Half the time when I got home, she was in bed. There were lots of times, holy shit, it's 11:30. I got to get home, you know. But that's how I stayed clean. Hanging around talking to some other addicts about how unmanageable their lives were. You know, and they listen to their stories, you know, and listen to their stories of powerlessness and how many things they did over and over and over, you know, as a direct result of being an addict. That's the kind of stuff that kept me clean, kept me out of my head, kept me out of my shit. There was always somebody with a worse story, you know. 86, there was crack cocaine was like crippling, you know, the cities, and you just saw person after person, you know, coming in with war stories that would make my hair stand up on end, but stuff that I hadn't done yet, you know. But my sponsor was good. He was a firm believer. He made statements like, you take these steps, you won't have to use again. That was a scary statement. But you know what? It was true. If I took the steps, I wouldn't have to use again. Yeah, that would still be a choice if I wanted to, but there'd be no excuse. I didn't have to use anymore. And it was true. You know, really, after... he made some suggestions that I took that worked. And when I realized that they had been working, and that's the only thing, you know, that had changed, was that I did some things that were suggested, I knew this program was going to work. It was just, you know, getting through some of the things that I really didn't want to do. But he helped me through that. You know, I know I didn't do my very best. I did the best of my ability. You know, my honesty level was just such at that point, but it was the best I could do. But he drug me through the steps. And you know what, I found out just how widespread and to what length people will go. And after about a year being in recovery, I moved out here to Central Pennsylvania. A dream unfolding, you know, and you know, I always wanted to own a home, and I knew where we were living. We were never going to do that. I was living in a chauffeur's apartment above a four-car garage on an old estate. Probably had been a carriage house, you know, where they kept the horses and the buggies and stuff. But that was one of the places where I worked off my rent and whatever. But I knew we'd never be able to own anything down there. And if I could, like in Upper Darby or wherever, you know, I didn't want to live there. I grew up in North Jersey, but I always liked the country. My folks used to take us on vacation, and I'd been some places like the Grand Canyon and the mountains, like Grand Tetons and stuff, and I knew what God had created out there. You know, his handiwork is pretty spectacular, and I always felt close to him when I was in that kind of a surrounding. And I liked the country. We ended up coming out here for a new way to live, and my biggest fear at that time was whether the program would be here, because I had leaned pretty heavy on it. And we had bought a piece of ground that had a beautiful view. It was halfway up the side of a mountain and looked out over a valley that, from the eye's point of view, it really hadn't changed probably since 200 years. And the house that was on the property that we got for free, the house was free. We bought the ground, but the house was free. It had been boarded up for over 20 years and looked like a ghost house. But the first 10 minutes I viewed the house, I saw that it was an old log building. And I always had a dream about living in a log home in the mountains. And to make a long story short, we ended up getting it at a public auction in Hollidaysburg. I listened through the bid, all through the bid, and the amount kept rising, and it was getting real close to the amount that I had. And I remember opening my mouth with a bid, and then the next thing I remember, people surrounded me and shaking my hand and said, "You got it." And they said, "Pete, your face was as white as a ghost." But I kind of came back out, and you know what? I made a bid, and everybody else just dropped out. I'd prayed a lot about that property. You know, they tell us not to pray for stuff, you know, but I kept praying, well, if it's his will, it'll happen. That was the only way I could get, how I could get calm enough till I get to that court date or that auction date. But another good test for me to find out, you know what, if you have faith and if things are supposed to happen, they'll happen. And I knew I didn't have enough money to buy that place. There was no way. Amish had been looking at it, you know, week after week. I kept hearing about all these Amish that are going out there by the van load, and it was perfect. There's a lot of Amish in that community, that valley. I said, there's no way that's going to happen. Well, the van load of Amish folks that were going to go to the auction that morning, the van broke down. And everybody who was there thought I was a family member come back from Alaska to bid on the old homestead. So as soon as I opened my mouth, they dropped on them. I was overwhelmed. Anyway, make a long story short, that family grew. I had two more girls, My oldest just graduated college. I feel great because I was a little instrumental in sending her to an interview for a job opportunity. And she called me up the other day and left a message on my answering machine that she got the job. And she was ecstatic, and she thanked me. You know, I'm glad that I was a part of that. I don't see my kids every day, you know. That is a blessing of a family that stays together. I had made a choice probably after about 10 years that when I was... let me just set the scene for a minute. We have time? What time is it? Time to go? I hope.
20 to 12.
What time is this over? Oh, so I'm over. Hey, I had made a choice anyway to test the waters again. I didn't think my life could be unmanageable, you know. And let me tell you, the stuff that hadn't happened to me before happened. And that's an experience, you know, that I guess I had to do, you know, for it to, because there obviously were some reservations. But today I have, I don't have to finish that movie, you know, of my, where my disease will take me. I know where it'll take me. The loneliest place I've ever been in my life. And I don't want to go there. So, I'm grateful, actually, today for that relapse, even though there were some horrible consequences. I am grateful today, because for real, I think I work a better program today. There's a lot more people in my life today, sponsors, sponsees, people who I've seen make unbelievable changes in their life. That's pretty special stuff for me. And yes, I still have a relationship with my children. It's not as close as I would like. But then again, you know what? Kids grow up, and the reality is they get a life. And, you know, Dad gets fit in, you know, when holidays and birthdays and, Dad, I need some money. It's reality, you know. But they do share special stuff with me. You know, things about relationships and that they have with their boyfriends. And you know what? I can help out there. My thing with gals, I never really grew up around girls. I had a brother, and my folks were real old school. So for me, you know, girls were like aliens, you know, through high school. I wasn't a dater. That's why I fell in love with drugs, you know. That became like my first love. And I didn't really know how to have a relationship, but today, you know what, for me, women, newcomers, gals that come into the program, I see them as human beings, and you know what, they deserve a chance at recovery, just like we do, just like guys do, and in an appropriate way, I try to reach out and say, you know what, I'm glad to see you. I'm glad to see you coming back. I try and treat him with respect, just like I would a newcomer guy. You know, I try and share my experience. And when I was down in Florida, I was talking to a friend, about a 50-50 ratio in meetings. Now, why in our particular area that doesn't happen? Well, it's because the gals don't stick around. And the only reason I can think of why the gals don't stick around is because it's uncomfortable, and they're made to feel uncomfortable. And guys, it's our job to, like, make sure that that doesn't happen. You know? If the women aren't there to reach out and help them, we need to reach out and help them, but in an appropriate way. And that doesn't mean, like, how quick we can get into their pants. You know, what can I get out of it? What can I get off of this new girl? boy, she's hot, you know. And if we see guys doing that, we ought to, like, step up, I think. That's my personal opinion, but I don't do that. But I feel I should sometimes. I've been around a while, and I see a lot more go than stay. And the ones that do stay, yeah, they're blessed. But what does it say? Any addict, not just guys, you know, any addict. So let's give him a break today and leave him alone. Let him recover. That's all I got. Thanks.